now our feature presentation.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. A Star is Born combines three things that movie audiences love: a passionate love story, an inside look at stardom, and the tragedies of fame. The first version came out back in 1937, then again in 1954, and again in 1976. And now a new generation has its own version of A Star is Born, the directorial debut of actor Bradley Cooper.
I'm off the deep end. Watch as I dive in. I never meet the ground.
That's, of course, Lady Gaga, who plays the undiscovered musician and singer-songwriter who Cooper's character, a weary rock star, falls for. We asked you for your thoughts on A Star is Born. Here is some of what you left in our inbox.
This is Tammy from Wisconsin. My husband and I both loved it. We thought it was a beautiful love story, and Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga were phenomenal in their acting and their singing and the songs they wrote together. Excellent movie. I recommend it for all.
My name is Louise, and I'm from Gainesville, Florida. I saw A Star is Born this weekend and absolutely loved it. Bradley Cooper again proves his acting chops, and Lady Gaga was a true revelation. I love also how they adapted the timeline to the present day by the inclusion of Saturday Night Live and its importance in the career of a young singer. And I think even the diehard Barbara Streisand version fans will absolutely love it.
Thanks very much for calling in. We'd love to get more of your thoughts on A Star is Born. How many stars out of five would you give it, and why? We're taking your calls this hour at 855-236-1A1A. That's 855-236-1212. Email us, 1A@WAMU.org. Comment on our Facebook page or tweet us at 1A. And fair warning, as always, we will be discussing this movie, spoilers and all. So, if you have not yet seen A Star is Born, but you want to, you might want to listen to this conversation later. You'll find it online at the1a.org. Joining us to discuss this movie, as he does every month, is the honorary vice president of the 1A Movie Club, John Horn, hosts The Frame, a daily program about arts and entertainment from KPCC Public Radio in Los Angeles. John, welcome back to the club.
Always a pleasure.
Joining us from Nashville is NPR music critic and correspondent Ann Powers. She is the author of Good Booty, Love and Sex, Black and White, Body and Soul in American Music. Ann, welcome back.
Hello.
And at NPR in Washington, Linda Holmes hosts NPR's podcast, Pop Culture Happy Hour. Hi, Linda.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
All right, let's work our way around. For each of you, how many stars would you give A Star is Born and why? Ann Powers, why don't we start with you?
My stars are vacillating.
Okay.
By the way,
for you, Anne and Linda, for those of you who may be new, we do not do fractional stars here. So you can't do,
I'll give it three and four fifths.
We don't do that here. No.
I'm in love-hate with this movie so deeply, so I guess I have to give it a three, since that's sort of a fake version of vacillating.
Okay, why three?
I think the movie is very well executed as a musical, in a sense, as a realization of the energy of rock, as a complete showcase for what makes Lady Gaga a great artist and performer, and as an immersive experience. I have a lot of problems with the fundamental story and problems with the chemistry between the two stars. So that's, I guess, for the music, thumbs up. For the movie, I don't know.
Kind of a thumb sideways, it sounds like.
Thumb sideways.
Linda Holmes, how many stars out of five and why?
I'm going to say four. I really like it a lot. I think that if you grade it a little bit according to what it's attempting, which is to adapt a story that is fundamentally a very old and somewhat dated story, I think if you grade it on that curve, you come out with a much more successful film, which requires taking a couple of the things that Anne was talking about, maybe with something of a grain of salt. But on the whole, I think it's meant to be melodramatic and affecting. I found it very affecting. And so I have to come out with the four stars.
John Horn, how many stars out of five and why?
I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 as well. I share some of Anne's concerns. I think for a first feature, it's incredibly well made. I also thought Lady Gaga delivered an incredible performance in her first starring role. I had serious problems with the relationship, especially the way that it started. And I also have bigger questions about this whole notion about whether or not artists can or cannot reinvent themselves, which is another part of the story. We'll get to that in a bit, but I'd say 4 out of 5 for me.
Linda, I always have to keep in mind that there are some folks listening who are never going to see the movie, but who want to know about the conversation around this. For those folks, and again, we're discussing this spoilers and all, can you just summarize what A Star is Born, what this version of A Star is Born was about, the basic story?
Yeah. So Bradley Cooper plays a guy whose name is Jackson Maine, which is a very sort of cowboy musician name. And he comes out and he's a guitar rock kind of guy, sort of country guitar rock. And he is in the depths of active alcoholism. He has a lot of problems. He is really wearing his body out. And he meets a young woman played by Lady Gaga, whose name is Allie, and she's working as a server for a looks like maybe a catering company or in a hotel. And she is singing evenings at a drag bar where she's sort of a guest among the drag queens. He comes in, sees her sing Lovey and Rose, falls in love with her. They have a passionate relationship during which her fame begins to explode. His fame begins to fade. Eventually, they marry. And like in every version of A Star is Born, it ultimately comes to a very tragic end. And as in, I would say, any version of this story, there's a push and pull between whether he feels worse about the fact that he's holding her back or whether he feels more resentful of the fact that she's eclipsed him. That's sort of where some of the tension in the story comes from.
John, this was also somewhat, I think, tense in some Hollywood circles because this was Bradley Cooper's first turn as a director. What's the general take on how well he did?
I think he's getting a lot of credit for not only directing the film well, but directing himself well. I think it's very difficult for any actor to direct him or herself in a feature film. And I think Bradley does a very good job directing himself. He gets a good performance out of himself. And listen, it's a very ambitious first feature. A lot of directors, when they're making their first film, do something a little smaller, maybe a little indie, not an iconic film like Star is Born. So the degree of difficulty, I think, was very high. And I think if you look at the crafts, you look at the way it's designed, the way that it's shot, the way that it's edited, the sound of the film, the music in the film, on those levels, I think everybody feels it's incredibly accomplished.
Let me get to some of your comments as we continue our conversation with John Horn, the host of KPCC's The Frame, NPR music critic and correspondent Ann Powers, and the host of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, Linda Holmes. Indy KJ Sharp in Indianapolis tweeted 5 stars for Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga's A Star is Born. Mary Lou on Facebook also tweeted 5 stars. It was fabulous. Suzanne wrote on Facebook, 4 stars. Having seen all the other versions many times over the years, I found myself making constant comparisons of pace, dialogue, and performances. I couldn't just enjoy it for what it was. And Mary wrote on our Facebook page, 5 out of 5. It is a soul-moving piece of art. The music is outstanding. The acting is superb. The creative storytelling choices are brilliant. Seen it twice and ready for a third. Let's see if we can squeeze in a call before we have to pause. In Michigan, Michael is standing by. Hey, Michael, what did you think of A Star is Born?
Well, I wanted to tell you, Joshua, because I've been hearing your promo for a week now. There actually are more than 4 A Star is Born. The first one was in 1932, and it was titled What Price Hollywood? It starred Constance Bennett and Lowell Sherman. So this is a great story. And the two ladies, by the way, that wrote that screenplay did a dynamic job, of course. They got nominated for the Oscar, but they didn't win. But clearly the storyline just lasts forever and ever. And by the way, the best version, hands down, is certainly Judy Garland. No two ways about it.
Michael, I appreciate you calling in. Ann Powers, can you give us some comparison between this version and the previous ones? I left out What Price Hollywood because it's not A Star is Born. What Price Hollywood is about an actor who discovers an actress and she makes her way up and he makes his way down. Star is Born is about musicians. But I do take Michael's point.
Well, actually, the first the the other Hollywood versions of Star is Born are not really music movies exactly. They're about Hollywood. The Janet Gaynor version and also the Judy Garland version. We shifted to rock and roll as the milieu with Barbara and Chris. And there are so many Easter eggs in this new version. Bradley Cooper did do an amazing thing in terms of revitalizing and reviving so many elements from the 1976 version, which, by the way, had a screenplay by Joan Didion and John Gregory Dunn, of course, two amazing writers, married couple, and which many people regard as a train wreck because Barbara Streisand and her then partner John Peters were running rampant over everybody else's desires, allegedly, in terms of making that movie, and it's seen as very excessive. However, I mean, I almost experienced this new Star is Born as like a cover version of that movie. There are so many references. There are lines directly taken from it. There are visual cues.
From the 70s version,
you mean. The way Bradley Cooper looks, the way he uses his mouth, it's like he studied Christofferson's performance to the tiniest detail. Even the Southwest decor in their house,
right.
When they're living together after they're married, it's exactly like almost the Barbara and Chris version. So that could be one reason why I had some mixed feelings, because I love the campy, excessive mid-70s version of this film.
We'll continue our conversation with Ann Powers, John Horn, and Linda Holmes in just a moment, and we will get to more of your questions and comments and reviews in a moment. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We are discussing this month's movie club selection, A Star is Born, with John Horn from KPCC, NPR's Linda Holmes, the host of the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast, and NPR music critic and correspondent Ann Powers. We'd love to hear from you, too. We always are happy to take your calls and voicemails at 855-236-1A1A. We'd especially love to hear from those of you who've seen multiple versions of A Star is Born or What Price Hollywood, and let us know how you think this one compares to the previous ones. You can also comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, email 1A at WAMU.org, and if you are just joining us, I will remind you one more time. Spoiler alert! We will be discussing all the details of this movie, so if you haven't seen A Star is Born yet, but you want to, you might want to listen to this conversation later online at the1a.org. Let's get to a few more of your calls. Heather in Indianapolis is on the line. Hey, Heather, what's on your mind? What did you think of the movie?
Hey, well, of course I loved it, but I loved it for the entertainment value, but my big piece was that moment when he brought her on stage, knowing that was not her comfort zone, knowing what she'd been told, that she wasn't going to be good enough, that no one would care, that no one would find her interesting or attractive. And she just went out and she killed it, and they loved it. And for that half second, you see that she realized they were wrong in everything they said to her. That was a pretty important moment if you're someone who's been afraid to put yourself out there for those same reasons. It's kind of a big moment.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Did that resonate for you in a way? Like, was there something personal that made you flash back to or think
about
for yourself?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, I do a lot of things where I have to go out in front of crowds or in front of people. And you often hear, you know, you need to be thinner or project more or be this or that or younger. And that moment was kind of all of us. It was kind of all of us will have that moment that we can personalize it, whether it's a job interview or what have you. I think that was an important moment.
Heather, what'd you think about that whole storyline with her nose? Like, for me, that kind of set up that moment on stage very well, that thing with her nose.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I'm just like a little bit thick as a person. And for me, her nose is like my weight. So she owned it. She was like, this is my nose and this is me. This is all of me. So take me as I am. And she worked it and, you know, got them to accept that this is me and it's not going to change. And I thought it was kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, Heather, I really appreciate you calling in. Thanks very much for talking to us. And I love Ann Powers. I love that kind of commentary on the music industry that was kind of baked into the film, particularly the thing about her nose when they're standing on the rooftop in L.A. and there's that alley billboard and he says, we should have just made the whole billboard your nose.
I mean, I think the thing about the comments about her nose is that also Gaga's honoring Barbara Streisand, mm-hmm. one of the greatest performers and greatest noses to ever exist and thrive in Hollywood. As far as a comment on the music industry, it absolutely is a powerful comment on the music industry as the music industry existed, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. I think that where this thing is placed in time, where this movie is placed in time, it's interesting to think about that because almost everything that happens still happens today in the music industry, but there's really no acknowledgement of how things are rapidly changing with the advent of streaming and playlists and the major record labels having less power than they used to. So it's almost slightly old-fashioned in its view of the music industry, but only that view would work for this film. You couldn't really tackle the collapse of the music industry in this movie.
Linda Holmes, could you also chime in? But by the way, for those of you who have not seen A Star Is Born, will not be seeing A Star Is Born, but just kind of want to be in on the conversation. She tells Bradley Cooper's character fairly early on that she's dealt with music industry people who were like, yeah, your songs are good, you sing well, but your nose just isn't quite right for music. And that was kind of one of those petty impediments that had prevented her from getting where she wanted to go. Linda Holmes, I wonder how you view that commentary on the music industry. When I was watching the movie, I felt like I was thinking about Lady Gaga, because Lady Gaga herself has this kind of over-the-top persona that she created to kind of be the vehicle for her art. I also thought about Pink, who is very much an invention of pop music, but who also had this kind of wry, cynical style that almost commented on it as she was doing it, and that was what made people love her.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I agree with Anne that the view of the music industry in this film, in order to be aligned with the view of Hollywood in the previous films in some ways, is very linear. It's a very linear idea of there is one road to fame, there is one path, you just simply ascend or descend, as opposed to there's no suggestion that either one of them, that he or she, might have success in a different kind of version of what it means to be famous. Like, that he would score movies, or, you know, that she would develop her own, you know, following through streaming without kind of going through that traditional path. So I agree with Anne about that. But I think that I'm not sure that you could do it any other way. I think the purpose is to have them pass each other on this fame ladder. And I think you kind of have to construct it that way. And what you're saying about Lady Gaga, you know, the caller was talking about kind of seeing Allie, the character, talking about, well, I have to, you know, I'm really afraid and I don't have confidence in my nose or whatever. It is funny to see an artist like Lady Gaga, who has been so able to make such an indelible mark on the industry and on popular culture. I mean, the funny thing about this movie is she's way more important to culture than he is, if you're talking about the real people. So it's kind of funny to see her big personality taking advice from, you know, Bradley Cooper, who's had a much more traditional Hollywood leading man type of career.
Right.
It's odd in that way.
Yeah. Except for that voicing Rocket in Guardians of the Galaxy. That's a little bit more of a diversion. But you're right. I mean, he is much more of like typical leading man actor. I wonder also, John, in terms of the storyline, you know, one of the big parts of the storyline is the love story, and Bradley spent a lot of time setting up that first time meeting. Here's a piece of that moment from A Star Is Born when they're falling in love in a grocery store parking lot, and Lady Gaga's character, Allie, is just improvising a love song.
Tell me something, boy. Aren't you tired trying to fill that void? Or do you need more? Ain't it hard keeping it so hardcore?
Is that me?
That's you.
He's just right there now?
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga in A Star is Born. Cooper spoke to NPR's Morning Edition with host Rachel Martin about his work and said this about working with Lady Gaga.
And then we went to the piano and sang, and it was this kind of wonderful thing. I couldn't believe it. So that was the beginning of the journey. And the first time we sang together, I mean, everything's live. We sing everything live in the movie.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing. We're not lip syncing. And I turned to Lady Gaga, who's singing next to me, and she was looking at me like I was Jackson Maine. And when you're in a scene and an actor is fully believing that you're the character, you can't not believe it yourself. So she really gave me that confidence.
Bradley Cooper speaking to Rachel Martin on NPR's Morning Edition. John Horn, what did you make of the collaboration between Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, particularly how it came out and the way the love story played out?
This is my big problem with the film. And I think for a lot of people, it's not an issue. It was for me. When her character, when Allie first meets Jack, he is a stumbling blackout drunk. And I think it looks as if he's just spent a weekend at a Bart O'Kavanaugh kegger. And I don't find that interesting or attractive. If she had met him sober and he fell into alcoholism and stayed with him, it would be more interesting. He's increasingly mean. He is petty. And I think as his alcoholism becomes worse, he continues to treat her worse. And yes, he's Bradley Cooper. And yes, he's this incredibly talented musician. But I never really bought fully what Ali saw in him that made me want them to stay together. And that was my big problem as a couple. And there's a line later in the movie where one of Jack's friends says, "She loves you too much to tell you the truth." I just thought that line was just really dated and not terribly truthful. That said, I do think as musicians, they collaborated really beautifully. And I think we also should give a lot of props to Lucas Nelson and Promise of the Real, because that was a main musical collaborator, especially for Bradley, in creating his sound. And I think somebody referenced earlier the first time that they played together Shallow on stage. Their work together, their chemistry together, their music together on stage is amazing. I just never bought really why she found him as attractive as she did.
Yeah, definitely the music for some of you was one of the big, big stars of this film. DJS tweeted, 5 stars. I've already seen it twice. Love all of it. Memorized the soundtrack in the 70s. Now I have a new soundtrack and I'm memorizing it. Ann Powers, can you expand on that idea of the musical collaborations that went into making this film?
Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper really went to the top shelf to find musical collaborators for this film. John was talking about Lucas Nelson, also Nashville super producer Dave Cobb, who produced Sturgill Simpson, Jason Isbell, Brandi Carlile, tons of people. He worked on this. They also went outside of Nashville for other producers to get this sound somewhere between rock and Americana and Gaga's own sound. As far as songwriting collaborators, there's many people from the top notch of Nashville again, Natalie Hemby, Hillary Lindsay. These are Grammy Award winning songwriters who worked on these songs. And yet through it all, I think the important thing is that you hear Gaga, right? There is a patina of authenticity. That's another theme in the film as well, which we can discuss,
yeah.
Which some people have had problems with, including myself. Like the idea that Jackson Maine's music is more authentic, more important than what Gaga or Ali ends up doing when she turns to pop. Pretty old-fashioned idea. But for the soundtrack, they found this amazing balance. And, you know, one moment I love in the film is the first song when Bradley Cooper, Jackson Maine, is on stage in front of thousands of people in an arena. He plays this song, and it sounds like a Lady Gaga song. <You know? laughs> It sounds like a Lady Gaga song in his voice and the voice of, like, a hairy, Americana-ish, Eddie Vedder-ish dude. That's Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam, whom apparently Bradley Cooper actually shadowed to gain some rock star mannerisms.
It showed.
But I know, but the melodies, the song constructions that we've heard in previous Lady Gaga hits, they're everywhere on the soundtrack. Right. And I really, really love that.
I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. Back to the phones now in Tucson, Arizona. Stephanie is on the line. Hey, Stephanie, what did you think of A Star is Born?
Hi, Joshua. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I saw it last night with my girlfriends. I absolutely loved it. But I did have a criticism about Sam Elliott's character. I generally am a big Sam Elliott fan, but I didn't really appreciate the comment he makes when Gaga is crying and he consoles her by saying that that Jackson's suicide wasn't her fault, that it was only his fault. And I work with substance abuse, people in substance abuse counseling, and I'm getting my master's in counseling right now at the University of Arizona. And I think that's a really dangerous message to kind of portray about suicide and depression and substance abuse, about how it can be someone's fault when really the treatment for it, you know, outlines it pretty clearly as a disease that there are treatment options for, although they are not always successful. So I was a little bit concerned about that message there at the end.
Yeah, Stephanie, I hear you on that. I remember when Allie was visiting Jack in rehab and she's like, you have a disease, like it's okay. That to me felt tremendously empathetic and right on the nose in terms of what you should say to someone who's struggling with addiction. And then at the end, when Bobby said, it wasn't your fault, it wasn't my fault, it was his fault, I as an audience member had to kind of think, okay, they're just kind of portraying maybe Bobby's anger, maybe his disgust that this has happened, that I'm not supposed to view this moment as a noble statement from him. But that kind of, I don't know, Stephanie, that kind of went up my spine the wrong way too.
Can I make a comment about that?
Yeah, please.
I think there's a really interesting subplot in this version that's about recovery and the recovery movement. The fact that we see Jackson Maine in rehab, in a circle that resembles an AA meeting, and also about mental health issues. There's that a scene, spoiler alert, where he's talking about a previous suicide attempt. All of that is stuff that would not have been considered, I think, for earlier versions of the film, because that really reflects new dialogues about mental health, about addiction, about recovery. And while I absolutely agree with the caller, I also felt weird about that line, about that it was his fault. I like the fact the film engaged with the present day discussion of these issues, which the other ones don't really.
Yeah, Stephanie, I appreciate you calling in, though. Thanks very much for sharing that with us. We also got some comments about that part of the storyline from several of you. Karen wrote on our Facebook page, I would give it 5 stars, but I had to set aside my professional orientation. And Karen, I don't think, says what her profession is. I had to set aside my professional orientation as to how his addiction and obvious depression was enabled and or ignored by those around him, and just listen to the music. The demise of the male character was not handled so graphically in the previous versions of the movie, and this was painful to watch. I wanted to scream, "Don't leave him alone!" at one point at the screen. The performances were incredible, and who knew Andrew Dice Clay could have such a great second coming as a character actor? I want to talk about Andrew Dice Clay a little bit more when we come back, but John Horn, I do take this point from Karen and Stephanie about the portrayal of substance abuse.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that we can't help people who have addiction. And I think part of the story in dealing with addiction and how crippling it can be is incredibly authentic. And I think that's a good takeaway, that, you know, you can be incredibly talented, you can appear to outsiders to have it all, and if you are fighting a disease as pernicious as alcoholism, it doesn't matter what you look like you're doing, because it is destroying you from the inside. And I think that's where the movie is most authentic about how horrible alcoholism can be. He looks like he has everything, and he doesn't, because he can't conquer this disease.
Want to get to some more of your questions and comments when we continue in just a moment. We're speaking to John Horn of The Frame, NPR's Ann Powers, and Linda Holmes. I want to get to a little bit more of the craft of the film. John spoke to the cinematographer of this movie, Matthew Libatique. We got a comment about Matthew. We'll get to that in a moment. And even more fundamentally, since we're talking about Bradley Cooper being a first-time director, Kathleen asked on our Facebook page, Basic question. How can you tell if a film is well directed? Good question, Kathleen. We'll get an answer in just a moment. Stay close. By the wayside. Back now to this month's meeting of the 1A Movie Club with Ann Powers, Linda Holmes, and John Horn. Let's get to a few more of your calls now. Gene is listening in Indianapolis. Hey, Gene, what did you think of A Star is Born? Hey there, Gene, can you hear me?
Yes,
okay.
I gave it 5 stars.
Why 5 stars?
Actually, I just loved everything about this. I've actually seen the other versions, and this one seemed particularly well updated to today. I thought it was the irony of her being discovered because he was a drunk and looking for a drink, and their life being torn apart at the end because of drink. I mean, that was the continuing thing. And one thing I don't think other people have mentioned is the part that her agent, I guess he was her agent, the guy who made her over.
The manager,
yeah. Her agent played.
Yeah. What did you make of that character?
I didn't like him. Mm-hmm. And I guess I wasn't supposed to.
Yeah.
But the minute he had that conversation with Jackson and basically getting ready to accuse or accusing him of being a problem in that whole relationship, I just knew that that was going to be the start of something really bad happening.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you, Gene, 100%. And I think I heard you chiming in as well.
No, that was me.
Oh, Linda, Linda, go ahead.
Yeah, I think one of the tricks, and this goes a little bit back to what you were all talking about the mental health and recovery portions of this story. One of the tricks with the manager is I think they do such a beautiful job of explaining where he is in his recovery process and where he is thinking about mental health. And they make her seem like someone who is aware of what his problems are. She's been wary of them from the beginning. But then they are ultimately headed toward this predetermined tragic ending in which he dies of suicide. And so I think the conversation with the manager, unfortunately, seems like a forced element that it doesn't feel organic to the story. It feels like it comes in to just drive that last, you know, to drive that ending. And it doesn't seem organic necessarily to the story as they've developed it. Because when he's been through these recovery processes, does it seem like without speaking to her, he would hear that from the manager? I mean, obviously, depression and addiction can operate in a lot of different ways.
For sure.
But, you know, did the movie really do a good job of explaining why that conversation at that moment would be enough to drive this enormous decision that he makes? And I'm not sure it did. I think that's where I found the ending to be not as satisfying as I thought the rest of the film was.
I agree with you on that. And on top of that, I think that the movie had a way, you know, I was always taught, you know, in writer school, show, don't tell. Mm-hmm. And there was this moment in the film where Ali says, I want Jack on my tour, make it happen or we're done. And I feel like there could have been a moment where, for example, he goes on stage to rehearse with her and he can't keep up, or he keeps forgetting the lyrics, or he falls down drunk. Like, something could have happened as
right.
opposed to someone coming to him and saying, you know, you're bad for her, right? That
well,
would have that would have, like, played that whole narrative in a different way for me.
Right, exactly. Someone he doesn't really know, someone he hasn't necessarily trusted, comes
right.
in and is able to kind of upend his entire sense of his relationship with her. I think that's part of the narrative issue with the ending.
Let's. Oh, go ahead, Ann. Go ahead.
Well, of course, the ways in which Hollywood and the fame machine, the fame monster, as Lady Gaga once called it in one of her albums,
mm-hmm.
Destroys people is a major theme throughout all of the versions of Star Is Born, and in fact, all of the versions of the Star Is Born have that manager character in a different embodiment. that character in this film, I absolutely agree, was more personally slimy, felt like, you know, a villain. Whereas in some of the previous versions, he almost was a sympathetic enabler of the male lead, and who then was like, hey, you know, we're trying to keep him afloat, but he's going to mess you up. Esther. Esther was the first name of Allie in the Star is Born versions. So the story of Hollywood destroying people requires that a stand-in for the machine be part of the cast. You know, it has to be there. I also just want to say before we end, got to get this out there, that this is also the story of how a woman's rise leads to a man's fall. And that's an eternal problem with the Star is Born, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a melodrama. It's melodrama is traditionally aimed at women. We feel very sympathetic toward the lead female character, but there is this underlying sense, I have to say it, that even as Jackson Maine is saved temporarily by the energy he gets almost vampirically from his young protege, ultimately he is destroyed because she has moved into the center and he has been pushed to the periphery. Feminist reading, problematic film.
Well, but you're not the only one who's brought that up. I mean, Julian wrote on our Facebook page, I fear the story of a rising female star nursing a failing male ego is the wrong story in this Me Too era. We get to a few more of your reviews of the film. Harvey in Ann Arbor emailed, I saw this film hoping to be moved, crying, deeply engaged. That didn't happen. 4 stars. I deeply appreciated Gaga's nuanced shyness in her early portrayal, which made Maine's characters advising her work well. I'd like to have the Sam Elliott brother character better developed. Possibly a moment, perhaps a moment could have been written into the car ride to the bar, possibly dropping him off from the performance. His scenes seemed a little too detached for me. Overall, I loved the big venue concert treatments. That kind of gets to a comment from Margot in Carrboro, North Carolina, who tweeted, 3 stars. A Star is Born was a meh story. The performances, especially the musical ones, were fantastic, and the cinematography was incredible. I expect a lot of nominations to come for DP, the director of photography, the cinematographer, Matthew Libatique, production designer Karen Murphy, costumer Aaron Benak, score, original song, and editing. John Horn spoke with the cinematographer, Matthew Libatique, about shooting live performances, which are not really straightforward spaces to navigate. Here is a part of that conversation from KPCC's The Frame.
This film was very difficult to sort of navigate the stage performances because we had 3 different modes. Basically, we had the Coachella mode, which is borrowing stages that were already set up with the lighting that was already existing and putting in our own crowds. And then there was the run and gun sort of, we have 10 minutes to shoot in between 2 sets with a real audience, apologizing and thanking the audience for shooting a movie in between 2 bands. And then we had the 3rd, which was the Greek Theater, in which Shallow was performed, where we actually, in more of a movie fashion, was able to create the Greek Theater as a set and put a certain amount of crowd in. So that was my most controlled scenario. But the lighting of it had to have a consistency. My goal was that, in creating a character from a cinematography standpoint, Jackson Maine might as well be... Jack White. And I had to make sure that the audience maybe subconsciously felt like this is his lighting, you know, this is his road show. And it's also in the film, in the sort of visual movement of it, a representation of rock and roll.
That was Matthew Libatique, the cinematographer on A Star is Born, speaking to John Horn on KPCC's The Frame. John, can you talk a little bit more about the making of this film, particularly back to Kathleen's question, who wrote on Facebook, how you can tell if a film is well directed? This kind of a film, the way that Matthew described it, presents all kinds of additional challenges to make it a well-directed film, shooting in so many different kinds of locations.
Yeah, I think the ultimate question about what is and is not a well-directed film is, do you believe it? Do you believe you're watching Bradley Cooper, or do you believe you're watching Jackson Maine? If you think you're watching the actor, you're not in a well-directed movie. If you are with the character, you're in a well-directed movie. And there are certain different ways to achieve that. And I think Bradley Cooper does achieve it. And I think one of the things that he achieves really well is, and Matthew Libatique talked about this scene, this performance of Shallow. So you have to direct that scene as concert footage. It has to be compelling as an audience to watch these two people play music. It has to advance the story narratively, that this is something that's happening on stage about what's going to happen going forward between these two characters. And it has to have some sort of emotional resonance. And all that is done through camera, it's done through editing, it's done through music, it's done through the actor's performance. And if you believe that Ali and Jack are on stage falling in love while they're doing this song, then you are watching a well-directed movie. And I think in that scene in particular, all of those elements come together where Bradley Cooper is clearly a very good filmmaker, because you're not watching Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, you're watching the two characters in the story.
Let me stick with you for 1 second, John. S. Stone in Florida tweeted, did Bradley have to really get shots to lower his voice?
He spent many months, he wanted to lower his voice an octave because he wanted his voice to sound like Sam Elliott's. So he spent many months, 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, lowering his voice an octave so that he didn't sound like Bradley Cooper. In fact, Matthew Libatique said in our interview that you didn't run, the one thing that Bradley Cooper said is, if I sound like Bradley Cooper, stop me. And he said it only happened twice in the film. Bradley Cooper didn't want to sound like Bradley Cooper. He wanted to sound like Sam Elliott's younger brother, which is where that voice came from.
But did he actually, because Sam Elliott is way down here. You got to go real far down to reach Sam Elliott.
Right. You're basically sounding like a magnitude 3 earthquake all the time. Did he get shot? I've never heard of anyone taking shots to lower their voice. Is that true?
I did not hear that. Although I did notice there is a scene where they're driving in a Dodge Ram truck, and it's just like, if Sam Elliott's going to pull out a Coors beer, we're going to have the trifecta of Sam Elliott, Dodge truck, Coors beer,
in a Dodge Ram.
But we didn't get that. We just got the Dodge.
Well, I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A.
Let's see if we can squeeze in one more quick phone call. Deborah in Finger Lakes, New York. Hey, Deborah, I know our time is really, really short, but what did you think of A Star Is Born?
Well, I'll talk fast. I was really looking forward to it. I really love and respect both principals. And I was looking forward to the music and the fairy tale. I came away really offended. I think the Bradley Cooper character was a white man who used his power and fame aggressively, almost in your face, in her face. And to address something Mr. Horn said, I don't know if she loved him. I think she was overwhelmed by it all. And, boy, in this day and age, to have a character like that extolled on screen, it really bothered me. I can't even rate it with stars, and I was so looking forward to it.
Have you seen other versions of A Star Is Born? Do you think this is a consistent problem with just the story, or do other versions deal with this better?
No, I think the Christofferson character had so much more heart, and he was more believable that he believed in her and really wanted to use whatever he could to further her career. But this Bradley Cooper character was just an aggressive maniac, egomaniac. I found it very offensive.
All right. Well, Deborah, I appreciate you calling in. Thanks very much for talking to us. Let me get to a few more of your comments about some of the characters or some of the actors, including Lady Gaga. Joanne in Cleveland tweeted, I love Gaga from her first album. I love her acting from American Horror Story. She does it all. I've seen all the movies except this one and will. Music from Guardians of the Galaxy has my 3-year-old grandson doing the rubber band man. I'm 69 and a black grandma for Gaga. Karen, of course, wrote on our Facebook page, the performances were incredible, and who knew Andrew Dice Clay could have such a great second coming as a character actor? Linda Holmes, I don't want us to end this conversation without giving him his high five. I really liked Andrew Dice Clay in this movie, and as soon as I realized it was him, I got happy. I was like, this is great, and he's got a great character, and he's in it. He was terrific to me.
Okay. I mean,
wait, no, hold on. No, don't you dare speak a word against Andrew Dice Clay. You didn't like him?
It's not that. I mean, perhaps Anne is hearing me a little bit on this because Anne gave the feminist reading. I wasn't necessarily looking for an Andrew Dice Clay career revival. I could have done with someone else. I think he's fine in it. That's fine.
Yeah,
I didn't need to see him again.
I mean, and I'm not a fan from his comedy, but like I thought he did a good job with that character. Like he was that guy. If I could have cast anybody not knowing who he was in his prior life, I thought he worked.
I suppose, yes, if we cast aside your entire prior life, you sometimes are a very much more charming screen presence.
Very true. Very true. Speaking of actors who could have been in the film, John, I know we're low on time, but there had been reports that Beyoncé had apparently been in the running to play the character that Lady Gaga ultimately got. Is that true? What happened there?
Oh, very much true. And that was an iteration of the film that at one point Clint Eastwood was going to direct. Beyoncé was even briefly going to be back with the Bradley Cooper version. I think actually Lady Gaga is a much better casting choice because I don't know that you could really watch that film with Beyoncé and not keep saying to yourself, That's Beyoncé. And I think Lady Gaga has a better ability to do it. And in fact, Andrew Dice Clay got that part over people like Robert De Niro and John Turturro and John Travolta. The one thing I will say about Andrew Dice Clay, yes, he's a horrible misogynistic comic. It does kind of belie one of the premises of the movie, which is that Jack's character says you can't reinvent yourself. You can't become this different artist. And yet Bradley Cooper changes his voice an octave so he doesn't sound like Bradley Cooper. And Andrew Dice Clay, who has in his comedy been a horrible human being, becomes a nice, loving father. So some of the choices in the movie itself belie Jack's complaint that you can't become a different artist as your career progresses.
Go ahead, Anne.
All I just want to say is Andrew Dice Clay plays the loving father who is also, however, a patriarch who himself wished he had been a famous singer.
Mm-hmm.
He plays those Frank Sinatra lines for laughs that, you know, people said he was like Frank Sinatra. But in a strange way, that character replaces the daddy elements of previous male protagonists. So, like, for example, the James Mason Norman Ming character who played against Judy Garland, he felt like a daddy. He felt much older and you know, really patriarchal, guiding her career. I feel like the Andrew Dice Clay character is not entirely sympathetic. And this is, you know, maybe a radical reading, but I feel like, hey, this is why this character, this Lady Gaga, accepts this other daddy.
We got to go out right there. I'm sorry. Ann Powers, music critic and correspondent for NPR. Linda Holmes of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast. John Horn, host of The Frame from KPCC. Thank you all for being with us. I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.